As it was, General Gott was fit, well, and looking forward to a couple of days' leave in Cairo. The last time he'd been there had been in April, some weeks before the Gazala battles. 4 months in the desert was a long time, and although he was well used to living in a tent, everyone suffered their fair share of privations, generals included. The lack of running water, latrines that were no more than a hole in the ground, and the millions of flies were the same for all ranks. Even in the last war, for all its ghastliness, Gott had never spent more than a few weeks without a hot bath, and only in summer, during an offensive, had flies been anything to worry about. Even then their numbers were nothing compared to those in the western desert. Even so, Gott had been determined to brief his new corps and divisional commanders, who had, until the previous momentous day, been colleagues, but were now his subordinates as well. Confidence was low. They had taken a hammering since the fighting had begun at the end of May. Eighth Army's battle plans had failed spectacularly. The Gazala line had been overrun, British armor decimated, and Tobruk had fallen. Tobruk, a coastal town of smashed buildings with a wrecked harbor of half-sunken ships, but a town in which much British pride had been invested. Although Rommel and his panzer army had been held at Alamein, there was no disguising the depth of the defeat. Some had already been moved on, replaced as the Ork was being replaced. The PM and General Brooke had broken the news to Corbett, Dorman Smith, and Ramsden, but all the divisional commanders remained. There were personal tensions between them, and national tensions too. Eighth Army might have been British in name, but in reality it was a polyglot force of Indians, Australians, New Zealanders, and South Africans, as well as British. Gott understood that these tensions needed ironing out, and fast. The new commander needed to clear the air, and if that meant delaying his leave by a few hours, then so be it. More important, he was conscious that the ongoing spat between himself and Dan Pienaar, the Afrikaner commander of the 1st South African Division, needed to be resolved. They had to put aside their differences. Eighth Army needed to gel once more, to fight as one. Pienaar had been the last to arrive at Eighth Army's tactical headquarters, and their conversation had taken longest, as Gott had suspected it would. That was why he had postponed his flight back to Cairo. Now, however, at a little after 2:30, his last meeting was over. Some plain speaking and an apology had achieved his goal. The air had been cleared. He and Pienaar had even shared a joke or two before they had launched into a series of planning conversations that had certainly renewed Gott's confidence. Seeing Pienaar's staff car rumble off in a cloud of dust, Gott felt both relieved and invigorated. He was only a week short of his 45th birthday, yet just a few days ago he had felt washed out, physically and mentally. Command was an exhausting business, but doubly so during defeat. When the Prime Minister and General Brooke had visited him, he had confessed as much to the Chief of the Imperial General Staff and had wondered whether it wouldn't be better to get some new blood in. He'd even suggested it might be time for him to be sent home. He had begun to think about seeing his wife and children again. God only knew it had been a long time since he had glimpsed their sweet faces. But he had not been sent home. He had been promoted and made army commander, initially a daunting and forbidding prospect, but now it excited him and seemed to have infused him with new energy and purpose. More tanks were on their way, new American models, as were more men, more aircraft, more vehicles. In the flush of bitter defeat, it was easy to view matters from a half-empty cup. But he realized there was now much in their favor. Rommel had been held. His lines of supply were overextended, and the RAF were making a damn good fist of ensuring that as little as possible reached the front.